Hello, everybody. My name is Jonathan, and you're welcome to the very first ever podcast of Burnt Popcorn. For those who don't know, I'm Jonathan Sheen, and I do another podcast with my friend Shane Hughes. That's called Blah Blah Blah. That's more about general stuff. And I also do another podcast myself called Blah 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 Comics, which is about comics, obviously. And this one, Burnt Popcorn, is going to be a bit different. We're going to talk about movie and TVs and stuff like that. And we're just going to get straight into it, into the most scrutinized TV show on right now, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm going to kind of review the first three episodes and kind of talk about kind of the show and maybe why it might get better. You know, reaction to it has been pretty negative. I don't think it's that bad. I think people are respected a bit too much from it. I also think that the show has more in common with Dollhouse, another kind of show Josh Whedon created but didn't really have a huge hand in, more so. And I think this is the thing about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Josh is not really kind of executive producer or kind of hugely involved in the show. And for those who know, Josh Whedon wrote and directed Avengers Assemble, and he's famous for his work on Buffy the Vampire Slayer and The Angel to a lesser extent. But like, he really haven't had that much success in television. I mean, Dollhouse is kind of the show closest to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. that he's made before. And for those who don't know, Dollhouse was out a couple of years ago, and it was a bit of a mixed bag as well, just like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It has some really good episodes and it has some good ideas, but most of the time it was a bit of a mess and it really gelled together. And the concept of the show is very simple. Elijah Dushku, who played Fate in Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel, she was a thing called a doll, which meant you could put any personality on it. And the idea behind the show was that every week she would become a different person. They would put a different personality inside her head. Now, this was meant to happen, but Elijah Dushku is such a bad actress that she basically just played herself every week, despite whatever new personality she was given. And the show kind of never really got over that big, huge flaw in it, that she just wasn't a good actress. And like every week, she was given these big acting moments and she failed. It was actually all the other stuff away from the main character that kind of worked better. The kind of politics of what was going on, Dollhouse, who was behind the peripheral characters, and the main stuff where Elijah Dushku's character always failed. I think Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is kind of similar, and a lot of the team that worked on Dollhouse works on this. And there was a big Alias 5 from Dollhouse, and I think there was a bit of an Alias 5 from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. For those who remember, Alias was Jennifer Garner's spy show back in the day. And again, it was very routine and generic, and I think the biggest problem with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is it is very kind of like, you know, generic, and there's a lot of gobbledygook in it. There's a lot of science talk that doesn't really make much sense, and I don't think anybody really cares about. I don't see why they have two science characters, the Fitzsimmons, the two English people. I think they're annoying. I can't tell, you know, I don't really know who they are, and this is three episodes in, and they just, I don't know, the way they talk go on, it just seems kind of silly. And also, it's the type of characters you see in every other show. I mean, I don't know why they're kind of obsessed with getting these science people in, or these tech people in. And I guess the lead female character is this Sky Girl, the girl who's kind of running this illegal website that hacks into S.H.I.E.L.D. and all this kind of stuff. And I suppose it was kind of interesting at the end of episode 2, she was clearly still working for the Rising Tide, and she's kind of like an inside agent against S.H.I.E.L.D. But I mean, I think it's quite obvious that Agent Coulson knows this, so there's not really much jeopardy there, and she's obviously not really going to do anything. And we're just going to get, again, it's very similar to Jennifer Garner's character in Alias, where she was working for two teams, but you kind of knew which team she ultimately was going to go with. And it isn't really much jeopardy. It was also kind of disappointing in this week episode that, like, she has this big moment where she stands up and fights back against the bad guys. But then she's just like this wimpy little girl when the main guy comes in and he needs her to save him. And, oh, she was almost going to hug him. I was like, oh, Jesus Christ. And the lead male actor, not Agent Coulson, the Chase guy, again, very similar to the lead male character in Dollhouse. Just a very generic, very, you know, kind of leading action kind of guy with no real personality, and he doesn't really seem like much of an actor, so he's a disappointment. And the only kind of non-white person on the show, the girl who's the calorie, I don't even know who she is. She's just this peripheral character that we're all supposed to be impressed by, and she pops up and beats the crap out of people, and ooh, she's the calorie, and it's just like so stupid. And that's another disappointing thing, that there's like, it's just basically five white people going around and one Chinese person saving the world. I mean, the Avengers is pretty bad, like five white Americans and, you know, all going around saving the world. I'm disappointed the show went the same direction. And the stuff with Agent Coulson and the whole kind of, You know, he's dead, he wasn't dead. I mean, we clearly know something's up, and hopefully they won't drag it out for much longer, because I actually really don't think it's that interesting. You know, whatever the reason is, it's going to be pretty simple. It's going to be pretty easily explained, and I don't think it's a huge problem. Like, he died and came back. It's a thing that happens in our TV shows. It happens in the comics a lot. And I don't think we need to dwell on it. The sooner we figure it out, it'll kind of get away, this annoying thing that they keep on dropping all these stupid little hints for, that kind of really obvious. And people like talk about the tone of the show and that there's a lot of comedy and stuff like that, and that's true, but when you look at the Marvel movies, it they do have a lot of comedy. You know, Iron Man 3 I think had too many comedy moments, and Thor has his funny moments, so does Avengers Assemble. So I think they're just trying to copy that lighthearted tone and keep it going. But I think because of 45 minutes, you don't have as much time, and it should also have some serious drama, some serious jeopardy, some character stuff, and unfortunately it doesn't have that. And like I say, I think people are expecting a lot more with Josh Whedon kind of being involved, but like, he only was one of the three writers on the first episode. There's also Joseph Leib, who's kind of the head of Marvel TV. He's more involved in this, and to be honest with you, his track record in TV isn't great. I mean, he kind of took over Heroes, or became one of the head writers in Heroes when it went to hell. He wrote a little bit of Smallville. He doesn't have the greatest resume. He's just in on Marvel TV more from the comic side. And I kind of can't imagine him doing a lot. He's going to play it very safe and very generic, which is the biggest criticism of the show. But I'm going to watch this week's episode. I hope it can pick up. I hope that we kind of lose a few of the characters. You know, we could lose Wanda Fitzsimmons, we could lose the lead guy, and we get replaced by more culturally diverse and just more interesting characters. I thought Gunn from the first episode was really good, and I would like to see that character come back and become part of the team. I think it'd be a hell of a lot more interesting than the people that have on it currently. So I'm kind of hoping the Age of S.H.I.E.L.D. will pick up. Just to switch gears now, we're going to talk about films for a little bit. And the full closure, I did make my own short film. It's available on YouTube. If you go DTA, Short Irish Film. That's DTA, Short Irish Film. You can watch it for free, obviously, it's on YouTube. I wouldn't charge you for it because it's not very good. But, you know, check it out. And I would love to make more films. And I'd love to make Irish versions of big Hollywood blockbusters. Like, you take that American movie Ridley Scott or Tony Scott and Denzel Washington did, Man on Fire. Of course, the Irish version of that would be Your Man's on Fire. There's also Samuel Jackson's Snakes on a Plane. That movie, Snakes on a Plane, is about a deadly animal on board public transport. So, of course, the Irish version of that would be Travelers on a Train. You know, instead of reviewing the movies that are coming out, like, you know, that get reviewed a million times and you're kind of sick of hearing about them, we're going to do something a bit different. I mean, the big movie coming up now is Thor 2, or as I like to call it, Thor and Horn, but I don't think they're going to go over that. But it's kind of a movie on Netflix. Most people might not have seen it, and I think it's kind of better to talk about these type of movies than the movies you're kind of sick of seeing. So it's called Dirty Girl, and it's not as bad as it sounds. And it came out in 2010, but it wasn't officially released in 2011. It's available on Netflix for free now. And it's a really sweet movie. It's set in the 80s, and it's about kind of like a young girl in high school, but she's kind of a bit of a dirty girl. As the title says, she's very promiscuous, and she's kind of doesn't really care about anything, and she's kind of out having fun. And then another character who's kind of gay, but isn't openly gay, and still trying to figure out, is he or isn't he, and dealing with that, and his father's very homophobic. His father actually sends him to a doctor to try to cure him of his gayness and stuff like this. And through a set of events, they end up meeting and kind of being forced to hang out together. And the lead girl kind of wants to go meet her father, who left her when she was younger. So the two of them kind of go on this road trip together. And you know, it really surprised me, because I was just one morning, I just put it on, I just kind of flicking through Netflix, and I was really taken back by it. Like, it looks brilliant. It's really well shot. There's some really cool visual stuff in it. I really like the acting. That Daniela is the lead character's name. The girl who plays her is Juno Temple. That's her real name, Juno Temple. And she's kind of, I guess she's a rising star. She was in Dark Knight Rises. She was Catwoman's friend, who you can kind of see fake lesbian subtext in there, if anyone didn't catch that, between their relationship, in my opinion. She's also got a lot of films coming out and stuff like that, so she seems to be doing well for herself. What was interesting was that, you know, after I watched the movie, I really liked it, and went online to kind of check it out. And, like, it's got really negative reviews. People really hate this movie. It's got, like, 25% on Rotten Tomatoes. Some of the reviews have been very scathing. The most positive review I could find was one person says, the actors do their best to strike a complete lack of strip and direction, which is, I thought, completely harsh. Like I said, I really liked it. I thought it was really good. And it kind of brings up a lot of my favorite films gets slaughtered at the box office or critical critics wise when they first come out, but then they're lauded as classics 10 years later. If you look at all the John Carpenter films, which would be mostly a lot of my favorite films, they were all died at the box office or they didn't get very good reviews. But now here they are, they're all the finest classics, and John's one of the greatest directors, you know, in film. Even Halloween, which was a huge box office hit, the critics hated it. And now it's like one of the most well-regarded movies, and so innovative and so influential on the genre, and it really defined horror cinema and the slasher films, and its use of first-person camera and all that kind of stuff was really, you know, cutting edge at the time. And it still holds up, like, you know, it's very cheesy, it's been ripped off a thousand times, but it still works. And my favorite scene in the original Halloween is they have this huge plot flaw in the movie where Mike Myers has been in the asylum his whole entire life, and then he breaks out and he drives the car perfectly, and later on somebody goes, "Hey, that Mike Myers guy's, I thought he was in the asylum his whole life, how did he learn how to drive a car?" And somebody just goes, he probably just picked it up. Which is just kind of to acknowledge this kind of big plot flaw, they just kind of go with it, which kind of made me laugh. Now, I'm talking about the original Halloween by John Carpenter, not the remake by Rob Zombie. And I actually really like the remake by Rob Zombie, and I actually think it's Halloween by Rob Zombie is better than Halloween by John Carpenter, just because it takes elements of the second one. It's obviously more modern and more sophisticated, and it kind of avoids the kind of boogeyman thing the first one goes for. You know, I think Mike is much more presented as something that could potentially happen, and that when he escapes the asylum, he's not some monster that can be shot a million times and can survive and all that kind of stuff, which is why I don't like the sequel, which completely contradicts the first one. I don't like dream sequences. To start a movie with a 10, 15, 20 minute, I think it was, dream sequence is the most stupidest thing I think ever, and I hated that. I also hated the fact that, you know, he was killed in the first one and just came back, and because they fought the whole supernatural thing in the first one, to kind of just have him back the second one without a real explanation, and again we're back into boogeyman territory. And also Rob Zombie's way that he brought his wife back into the film as a ghost, and but then three different characters see her ghost, so you know, it's kind of implied that Mike Myers sees her because he's crazy, but then also his sister, and then I think another character sees her as well, so then it's not crazy, you know. Okay, maybe sister's going crazy, but is she going to see exactly the same thing as her brother is? So clearly he's saying ghosts exist in this world. And it's a bit of a disappointment given the how much I liked the first one, because it was more grounded and more realistic take on it. Second one was disappointment. Thankfully they didn't do a third one. They are threatening to reboot it again, which I could take it or leave it. I think kind of Rob kind of nailed it on his take. So just to finish kind of talk about movies that are kind of on Netflix that are kind of cheap or, you know, have been around for a while, they should be able to find them on the internet and stuff. And, you know, really, I think just to kind of talk about that for a second, anybody who talks about piracy and say that piracy doesn't do any harm, I mean, clearly it's destroying the high street. You know, HMV are gone out of business. A lot of places like that are gone out of business. And I mean, I see so many times people put stuff up online like, "Oh, why would you buy a movie? Why would you rent a movie? Should you get them all for free?" Well, the point is, if nobody pays for movies, they're not going to make any more. And so just, you know, do remember that, you know, in Netflix, you know, it's only €7 a month. You get to watch loads of movies. It's a pretty good deal. And so, yeah, no piracy, please. But to go back to kind of movies maybe kind of gone over the radar or not as well known, I'm going to talk about how I watched this because I kind of watched it out of order. So in 2003, there was a documentary called Overnight, which was about Troy Duffy. And Troy Duffy kind of came out about the same time as when Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino and Kevin Smith kind of came out from Hollywood. And this is kind of going back to the early 90s. And those three guys kind of really kind of came out of nowhere. And the first movies they made really put them on the map and kind of launched them. And they still have careers today, obviously. And Quentin Tarantino would be the most successful, obviously. Reservoir Dogs and then Rodriguez and Kevin Smith. But they're all kind of known as, you know, clearly fissioned young independent filmmakers that came from the Weinstein company, you know, Harvey and Max Weinstein. And Troy Duffy was kind of the fourth guy, you know, he was supposed to be the next guy. He had this strip for a film called Boondock Saints, and it got picked up by the Weinstein company, and he was supposed to be in that school in that era. And this documentary called Overnight was made by his friends at the time, and they're all hanging out, and he asks his friends to make this documentary about this point in his life. And the documentary is very negative on Troy. It shows he's complete egomaniac. He's gone off his head with paranoia. Even though he hasn't made the film yet, because he's been picked up in Weinstein and he's being touted as the next Tarantino, as the next guy up, it's gone to his head, like, and he eventually falls out with Weinstein, and he ends up making a movie, but not with the same budget and not with the same star cast he had in place. I mean, like, he was talking to guys like Harrison Ford and, you know, Keanu Reeves and guys like this, and, you know, the movie made up a lot cheaper with a lot less starry cast. And in the movie, it shows him becoming completely paranoid and completely blowing his chances, and that he's a real dickhead. And I got the sense when you watch the documentary that the movie wasn't very good, and that, like, he kind of blown his chance, and that also he was a bit of a dickhead. And so then I watched the movie Boondock Saints. It's absolutely fantastic. It's so well made. They clearly don't have a lot of money, but God, it doesn't matter. And it's such a really good script, and there's so many good scenes, and there's so many cool moments. And, you know, William Dafoe is brilliant in it, and they got Billy Connolly does a bit job as the boy's father. So I would definitely recommend that you guys check that out. And it's kind of, it's whichever way you watch it, if you watch Overnight first then Boondock Saints is good, or if you do it the other way around, it's fine. And I think, you know, Overnight is a bit harsh on him, because he was clearly talented, and he didn't make anything else after Boondock Saints except for Boondock Saints 2, which was all right. You know, like, a lot of sequels, it rehashed a lot of stuff for the first movie, which was disappointing, because what I liked about the first movie was the fact that it was different and it kind of had its own voice and stuff like that. But the second one kind of did the same thing, so it was a bit pointless. But still, it's good as a companion piece. And I was very surprised by, you know, how good it was and how talented he seemed to be. And it's a shame he didn't go into that mold with Kevin and Rodriguez and Tarantino. So yeah, so that's the first one. Thanks very much, guys, for listening to the first episode of Burnt Popcorn. They're going to be quicker and shorter because obviously I'm doing them by myself. I hope in the future to get, well, I'm definitely in talks with one local filmmaker. Hopefully he'll come on the show, fingers crossed, and other people like that, and also other people that have interest in movies. So if you guys like this podcast, please comment, please contact me on email, cmpxt7@yahoo.ie. Any questions, or you want to be on the show or anything like that, or any comments, things you did or didn't like, or ideas to add. And thanks for listening to the first episode of Burnt Popcorn.